Welcome to the Misfit Stars podcast. I'm Shannon Curtis.
And I am Jamie Hill. Welcome to episode 19.
Hello, everybody.
It's so nice to see you. I was making Shannon laugh just before we started here by pretending to reach to hit the record button for the podcast and strangling myself on my microphone stand.
Yeah, it was very funny.
Yeah,
very.
You were giggling when we started.
Yeah. Jamie's trying to make me laugh today because he made me mad earlier.
I did. Shannon and I had words earlier today.
So now he's like trying to like butter me up so that I'm like cheerful for the podcast.
I just want you to be cheerful in life.
I know. I
want you to be cheerful just as a way of being during your just natural existence.
Thank you.
Of which the podcast is part.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it's a reality podcast, really.
Oh, geez. No, don't say that. Well,
no, that's terrible.
Keeping it real today, actually, because
that's right.
We are a married couple, and guess what? Sometimes we have words.
Yeah, you know, it would be weird if we didn't.
It would be strange if we didn't.
Imagine a couple where just every single day for the rest of their lives, they never have a disagreement about anything. That's weird to me.
I wonder if there are people like that.
Is there anyone who's listening to this who's like that? If so, just hit reply and let us know. And
tell us your ways.
Yeah. And I'll be like, you're lying. If you would like to be told to your face that you're a liar, just send me an email about how you never argue with your spouse.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to be here with you. I really am.
Thanks.
Way, we worked through our words. So
that's right, because that's what you do.
That's what you do.
Yeah, so ideally.
Yay.
Yeah. Imagine like if you didn't and then everything just got really bad and then you just got divorced. That's how that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah, it is. That's not what's happening here.
No, it's not. Sorry, that got sad.
It did.
Rewind that.
Welcome to our podcast, everyone.
Hey, how y'all doing? So to recap, it's episode 19. We're so happy you're with us. Thank you all so much for being here. This podcast is a public episode brought to you by our Misfit Stars supporting members.
Thank you, stars.
We have some new stars this week. We have a couple of neighbor stars.
I know.
Because we did a podcast about our neighborhood last week. And
then they listened.
And then they listened.
Ooh, hey.
Yeah. It's dangerous like doing a podcast and like talking about your neighbors because it's public.
I know.
But because we're kind and we use our words responsibly with everybody else but each other.
i.e. this morning.
You know, it works out.
Yeah. So new stars. Thank you, new stars.
Yeah. Happy, grateful for you very much. And you know, if you are a listener to this and you are not currently a supporting member of this podcast, aka a Misfit Star, aka one of our stars, maybe you should consider becoming one.
You absolutely should consider that.
You should. It's another small way to support us. And, you know, frankly, we need all the freaking help we can get, as evidenced every week on this podcast.
Yeah, so what you do, if you want to become a Misfit Star, part of this community, you go to misfitstars.com, mm-hmm. and you click on the second big pink button, which says Unlock All Episodes, and it'll take you to the page where you can sign up to choose what membership level you want to be part of this.
It's easy.
Yeah, it's great.
It's cheap. It starts at $5. Do you have $5? Would you like us to have it?
Yeah. So
thank you.
You mentioned this is a public episode. Every other episode is not a public episode. Every other of these episodes are for members only. Mm-hmm. So if you become a star, you get to listen to all the juicy episodes.
If you don't become a star, what happens is every other episode, it gets good and then it cuts out and we do a pitch for you to become a member.
That's a trick. Tricky trick.
It's a dirty trick.
Yes, but come become a member. We would love to have you there. We have this online Facebook group, a private Facebook group online.
It's like a community,
that's
really.
Where Facebook is online.
It's on the internet.
Yeah. We have this private Facebook group where we talk about some of the stuff that we have brought up in the podcast and just general things going on in life. And you know, I haven't talked with you about this yet, but we have a new single coming out soon. And so I'm kind of like throwing this out here. What do you think about previewing that song in our Misfit Stars community first?
Oh, obviously.
Yeah.
No, the Misfit Stars supporting members get all the best stuff first.
They get the cool
stuff. That's the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes, this new single will be coming out, but our stars will get the first listen.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you even want to share the name or not yet?
Nope, not yet.
Nope.
Nope, not at all.
Cool.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But it's a great song. So anyway, there's that. Do the Misfit Stars thing. Become a member. Join
mm-hmm.
us.
We would be grateful.
We
Thank
would be
you.
Very, very grateful. So a little bit later in this episode, we're going to be getting into a listener topic. Is this from Kitty?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said Katie.
No.
Okay. A little bit later in this episode, we're going to be getting into a listener topic from our star, Kitty.
Kitty S. from Brooklyn.
And Kitty had an interesting question. I'm curious actually where her question came from.
Oh, so yeah,
it's very particular.
Yeah.
But she asked about our relationships with our fathers.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
It was a very interesting question. No idea where it comes from. I'm more interested in the origins of the question than the question itself.
Me too. But she had some specific questions and we're going to answer those, and that'll be interesting and fun. So yay.
Thanks, and surely Kitty. Freudian in nature.
Yeah. Maybe
cool.
So.
Yeah. So what is the root of the Oedipal complex? Well, let's talk about that.
We're going to break down Hamlet. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. So what did we get into this week? Oh my gosh. A lot of stuff.
Did we get into a lot of stuff?
I'm looking at the list. It's got so many things.
We did make a list.
Yeah.
Yard work. We did yard work?
We did. Remember? Again? We put down all the stuff on the yard.
Oh, yeah. We're trying to rehab our lawn.
Yeah. We have a whole lawn care program, which basically just involves a series of things that you put down with a spreader, which just is shorthand for walking back and forth across your lawn, but not mowing it.
Which I love. It's like vacuuming. It's the kind of task I love to do.
We should have you do more of it. I like it, but you love it.
I love it.
Shannon loves orderly, repetitive, fiddly tasks.
Yes.
And I do too, but like I admire as that sort of person how much more than me Shannon loves it.
Oh, I do. I really love it.
It's
you
great.
Know, we don't have carpets in our house, but you know, growing
anymore.
Up, anymore, right. But growing up, we had carpet and it was my chore often to vacuum. And I loved making those like perfect lines on the carpet with the vacuum.
I bet you did.
Oh my gosh.
Did you ever go like at like an angle, like a 45 degree?
It depended on the room and what it called for, you know? But I get great joy out of
I love
straight
it.
Lines.
And similarly, when I was a little kid going to Fenway Park to see baseball games, I was always the most enthralled when I was young, not by the game, but by the pregame stuff where they're like doing, like where you show up and the lawn is all mowed in perfect cross sections.
Yeah.
It's just so beautiful.
Yeah, and they do the seventh inning stretch and they like rehab the infield and they do those like, what are those like?
The draggy dirt
the draggy
things.
Draggy dirt things.
Yeah.
That's, I'm sure, the word they use.
Yeah.
Yes.
DDTs.
So yes, we did some lawn rehab, which was nice.
And it got us outdoors, which has just been wonderful lately. Last week, spring arrived last week. Yeah. Like clockwork on like March 21st.
It's so great.
It's wonderful. It's just like every 3 months canonically, right around the solstice or the equinox or whatever it is, boom, new season, you know?
Love it.
If you don't like the weather around here, wait a minute. It changes with rapidity.
Wonderful.
Not like where I grew up where it's 5 months of winter and then they jam all the rest of the season into the remaining 7 months, which is just BS. You kind of get screwed on spring and summer and fall. You get screwed on everything because of the insane winter in Vermont, which is lovely, but you know, long winters.
Yeah. But being outside was nice. We got to talk with a lot of neighbors and all that kind of stuff. That was great.
It was wonderful.
But when we were not outside, we were inside hard at work this last week.
We have been doing music.
Music. This is like serious recording time.
It's wonderful.
And we've been working on the first single for the new record.
Which we can't name. You don't want to name it.
We can't name it yet.
Nope.
It's just not time yet.
It's not. We know the name.
Well, I mean.
We just can't share the name.
Do you want to share the name?
I don't know.
I don't know. This is...
It's up to you completely. I'm going to defer to you on this.
No, you know what? Let's wait.
Cool.
Yeah. But the song is sounding so good. You know, I always write stuff in my little writing studio and then I bring it to Jamie. Mm-hmm. And in this case, I think I had a pretty minimal demo that I had made. It was like piano and vocal.
And like a little bass line.
A little bass line. That's right. I wrote the bass line.
Yeah.
And with like one little synth part, one little synth idea. This is minor.
Which wasn't even really so much a synth part. It was like, it's technically a synth sound, but it's such a fuzzy sound that when you drop it in the context of all the other instruments, it just goes.
It sounds like.
You know what it sounds like to me? It sounds almost like anticipation.
Well,
it's got the crackling of anticipation about it.
Well, and this song has that going on.
Yeah,
in
I think you chose that sound really well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I brought, you know, a pretty bare bones minimal demo to Jamie, and it's just so much fun. Every time to like just experience this song coming to life, you know, like as Jamie's adding his ideas, as you're adding your ideas, like it just, it's really cool. And I'm so excited to share the song with you.
It's nifty.
It's, we chose it because it really sort of is sort of a great sort of umbrella sort of statement about sort of the general direction of this whole album that I'm writing and the themes around which I'm writing for this album.
You know
album.
That Shannon tends to write on a theme, and you know that the first song tends to be the thesis statement. That's how it's been the last few years.
It has.
Like since 2015, really, that's been the deal.
Yeah.
This is the fifth year of theme and thematic statement.
Yes.
It's a good organizing principle.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm so eager to share it with you all.
Yeah, same. It's different. It's different for us.
It is. It's great. I'm really happy about it. And so, great. Maybe next week or so we'll be able to preview. Maybe later this week we can preview this to our Misfit Stars.
Interesting.
Possibly later this week.
Why not?
I have another idea I'm throwing out there, okay. Like on the spot for okay. you. What if we record a special podcast episode?
What?
A non-Wednesday small podcast episode what? That will go only to our Misfit Stars members, in which we talk about the song and preview the song first.
We could do that. We could also do a live broadcast just in the private Facebook group, accomplishing the same thing.
We could.
Because then we can do the thing that our people love, where we play it out of the speakers, we nod our heads along to it.
It's true.
So which true. For some reason seems to add value.
Maybe we'll do both.
Yeah.
Cool,
oh, I love
cool,
it. How fun.
Cool. Okay, so what else?
It's the time of year when we get to unveil a whole bunch of stuff for people, which I love. It's really fun for me.
It is fun.
What else did we do? You wrote a weird little opera song.
I did.
It's great, though.
So I'm still writing.
I say weird in a loving way. I think it's cool.
No, I know, I know. I'm still writing for this record, which is, it's been great because we're working, you know, we can kind of transition between different things, like a little recording here, a little writing here.
Keep it fresh.
Keep it fresh. So I went upstairs to write something last week, and I made a post about this after on Facebook because I was just like, I don't know. I spent the whole day writing this song, and it was done by the end of the day, and I'm like, mm-hmm. That was weird. It was a weird song. And I'm not sure if it's
really
good.
Reconsidering my decision to take acid today.
Good. I did not take acid. Come on.
Just full disclosure, Shannon has never taken acid,
no.
people. Come on.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness.
No. No drugs ever of any kind, actually.
Nope. So weird to me. I used to take different drugs multiple times a day for like years on end. I don't get it.
I got done and I'm like, was that was kind of weird. Is it good weird or bad weird? I just really don't know. And so I played it for Jamie, like on the spot. Like it's probably the first time I've ever written a song and played it for you so quickly after having written it.
You didn't really play it for me. I had to kind of play it for myself.
Oh, okay. Well,
I had to open up the session and put it on my computer and hit play.
Whatever. But you know what I mean? Like
I'm just being pedantic.
You are. Thanks. So it was really like a really soon reveal, you know,
Yeah, it was very quick.
But you thought it was good weird?
Oh, I loved it.
It's pushing,
I told you as much in the moment.
Yeah, it's pushing some traditional structures that I usually work within. Mm-hmm. It's different.
Yeah.
So.
And it's just slightly odd.
We'll see. I think it'll probably end up on the album.
Probably.
We'll see.
I hope. I want it to.
I would like to for it to also.
Yeah, I think it will.
So yeah, so that's very fun.
This record's going to shape up maybe to be almost more like a little bit of Metaforma in a way. I feel like.
You think so?
Maybe.
Interesting.
Just like songs going in different directions, but like the unified theme kind of thing.
Interesting.
And I don't know. I feel we're only a song and a half into it. But like,
I know. Well, I've written a bunch more, but yes, recording wise. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we are just like, just clacking right along. That's not a word. We're like.
No, it is. It's a word.
Clacking.
It's like a train.
Oh, great. We're clacking right along. That's exactly the word
like,
I wanted.
It's like a train on the rails.
We're clacking right along with album producing, writing, and then also by the time this episode is released, we will have started our search for 2019 house concert hosts.
Gosh, this year is just coming at us like a freaking train.
Clacking right along.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's very exciting. So here's the deal. If you're listening to this and you're thinking house concert host.
What's that?
Could that be me?
Yeah,
and I'm in here to tell you that, yes, maybe it actually could be you.
Yeah.
So just very briefly, if you have a living room or a backyard or a garage or a basement or, you know.
A basement with appropriate fire exits. Come on, people.
Some place for you and 30 of your friends.
Yep.
Friends, neighbors, family, coworkers, you name it.
Enemies, I don't care.
Yeah. To gather and do an event. We would like to come and do that with you.
Yeah. So that's how we share our music.
It's how we do it.
Yeah,
we don't
exclusively.
We don't play in venues.
No.
We just play in...
We don't play in clubs.
Houses.
We don't play in coffee shops.
None of that.
No. We play in the homes of people who support what we do, our community of people.
Yeah. I think it's probably, besides the couple of theater shows that we've done when I've opened for Sean Colvin last couple of years.
That's a weird little side hustle.
It's a weird side hustle, yeah. besides those, I think that we haven't done a traditional venue. And the theater show we did in Seattle, the film we made.
Yep.
And
we performed at a handful of fundraisers.
Yes. But like in terms of like the shows we do on tour and that kind of thing, I don't think we've done a traditional music venue since like maybe 2012.
I think that might be right.
Isn't that wild?
Maybe even 2011.
So houses.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
That's what we do.
If you're a person who's like, hey, and we go all over the United States.
And sometimes into Canada.
Also Canada.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking, hey, I could do that. Yes, you probably could.
It's amazing.
So if you want to send me an email or a Facebook message, whatever, and I will send you our host packet, which gives all the information about like the kind of hosts we're looking for, what's required of you to be a host, how this whole thing works, how we organize the shows, how we pick the dates, how we organize the tour. It says it all. I will send that to you and you can read it and see if you really do want to do it. And if you do, then you can fill out an application and we will get you on the tour.
It's a really great little information packet. We totally revamped it this winter.
Yeah.
It's all new for 2019.
All new.
Yeah.
So yes, very
all new and expanded. 33% more life-changing content.
What else we did this week?
Well, more picketing, and that's going to be ongoing.
Right, more picketing with the neighbors.
Because these MFers are still trying to build a stupid Cube Smart in our neighborhood, and we don't want it. It's not going to happen.
No.
We're stopping it. Yeah, it's not cool.
The neighborhood's banding together.
Yeah, a new thing that has happened with that this week is now we have yard signs.
That's right.
Yep, shout out to Toby for getting the yard signs happening.
Good job, Toby.
Good job, people.
Yeah, so the picketing... Okay, the picketing's great.
It's wonderful.
So yesterday we went out picketing on. So it's we're picketing at the in front of the site where they want to build this storage unit,
yep.
which the neighborhood doesn't want, and it is in violation of a neighborhood covenant that says that that area is supposed to be residential housing.
Very explicit
and not a commercial property.
Very unambiguous.
And here's the thing: like the neighborhood is actually willing to like. Negotiate with the developers, like, hey, why don't you develop residential instead?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not that they don't want anything built there. It's that we want housing built there.
Yeah.
And so anyway, the effort is going great. The people in the neighborhood who have been spearheading that are doing an amazing job.
Yep.
Gathering people together, you know, to fight this thing. And I think that the fight itself is going well. The thing that's the best about it, though, has been just getting to know our neighbors.
Oh, it's wonderful.
And yesterday was such a wonderful example of that. Like, we walked out there, and there were there was a couple there.
Yep.
Norma and Neil.
Yeah.
Norma was sitting
our
down.
Our two new favorite people, Norma and Neil.
In the whole world, yes. Norma was sitting down in a beach chair kind of thing because, so Norma's 84 years old.
Yep.
Neil is 86.
Yeah. They're 40 years older than the two of us, precisely.
Exactly.
Norma's 40 years older than Shannon. Neil's 40 years older than me.
And I spent nearly the entire time talking to Norma while we were sitting there holding our picket signs and, you know, waving at passersby, trying to get honks and stuff like that. But really, we just talked for nearly an hour.
And I with Neil.
They're just the most amazing people.
Yeah, like, they're great.
I want to be them when I'm 40 years older than I am right
they're
now.
They're just engaged and lively, still completely sharp, a little bit mad about stuff.
Yeah.
But like with a sort of gentle, time-worn kindness that comes with being even 40 years older than we are.
Yeah.
Those little bits of kindness that you and I see cropping up in ourselves. And at least me more than you probably because I started further out there than you did in terms of like just mouthing off about stuff. You know, you've kind of gone the opposite direction.
I'm mouthing off more.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I have offloaded some of the mouthiness back to Shannon. We were talking about this morning. Like Shannon has really found her voice in the last 5 years, and sometimes that voice is PO'd, a little bit mad.
Sometimes it is.
Yeah. That's good.
But Norma and Neil they were wonderful. It was great to get to spend the afternoon with them and
the best.
Around this like cause that's brought us all together. It's pretty neat. I'm like falling more and more in love with our neighborhood because
and like
it.
Every person who's out there picketing is like uniformly cool. It's not like there's like Norma and Neil and like everyone else is kind of like they suck.
No, they're all great.
Everyone's wonderful.
Just
every single person
happened to talk
with
them.
We just
lucked yesterday.
Into a great neighborhood.
We really did.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Okay, so last night we got to go see Michelle Obama.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So We got tickets a while back, and she was supposed to be here in...
Which, first of all, screw Ticketmaster. Those jerks.
It was a terrible ticket buying experience. It was the kind of thing where I was like, I would select two seats, and then I'm like, okay, those look good. Those are in my price range. Awesome. And then I would click the next screen to confirm, and I would get to the next screen and be like, oh, sorry, those tickets have already been sold. And so I go back and pick two more seats and click through to confirm. Oh, sorry, that's been sold. And that literally happened like 25 times.
It's a kind of website that makes you question whether you're a dumb person.
I know. It was terrible.
A website so bad it makes you feel bad.
But I did end up getting the two seats. And they were nosebleed seats, and I didn't care. I just wanted to be in the room.
Yeah.
And we were
in the
room.
I wanted to be in the dome.
In the dome. Yeah, the Tacoma Dome.
Home is where the dome is.
That's right. So yeah, she was supposed to be here when we had our snowpocalypse a couple months ago, but they had to postpone because it was such a snowy storm.
It would have been very dangerous. People would have been wrecking their cars to get there.
Yeah, yeah. So it was last night, and oh my gosh, it was so great.
It was wonderful.
I've been reading her book, borrowing a copy of it from our neighbor. And I thought before we went that I was really wanting to read the whole thing before we saw her in person.
Right.
And I was kind of bummed because I only got like halfway through before last night. And but then we saw her speak, and now I'm like, actually, I'm kind of glad that I have another half of the book to read because I just want to stay in her world longer.
Aww.
She's just such... she's such a presence. Like yeah. she's, and here's the thing, like she is such a presence and she's so smart and she's so inspiring and she
and
has
she's funny
and she's super funny.
She's really funny and like quick witted and not afraid to do like lighthearted put downs. Like she's just salty.
Oh
it's
yeah.
Great.
Jimmy Kimmel was the interviewer last night.
Yeah.
Who's a super funny guy and she matches him. No problem.
Oh,
like
yeah.
it's like no, yeah. Like they, she can go toe to toe with Jimmy Kimmel.
Absolutely.
So she's just this.
She's like, she's the kind of person who can make Jimmy Kimmel blush. You know what I mean?
Yes, it's so true. And she's strong. She's compassionate. She's intelligent. She's, you know, she's this big presence. And yet what, like the thrust of her book and also of the event last night, her message is really like, look, I'm just a girl from South Side of Chicago mm-hmm. who grew up, you know, in relative poverty, you know, like not poverty, lower
like middle class,
working class,
yeah,
I guess you would
class.
Call it. But the whole point is that, like, you know, I'm just a normal person,
yeah,
just like you all are, just like we all are. You know, there's not something, there was not like she wasn't born First Lady Michelle Obama, right? She was born just a girl, Michelle Robinson, to a regular family in Southside Chicago, and the point of it all is that, like, we all have that kind of potential.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, total side note about this whole potential thing vis-a-vis your comment about like her growing up sort of lower middle class or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like, I think that like there's a huge difference between like when she and like she's what, 10 years older than us mm-hmm. and we were kids. Like even if you were like poorer, if your family was poorer like in the 70s mm-hmm. or like 60s or whatever, you still, odds are good, had access to a much better public education than you do now.
Well,
which is the kind of thing that lifts people up some, right?
But even in her book, she talks about how she, during her elementary school years, witnessed the decline of her school.
Is that so?
Because she was living in South Side of Chicago during white flight when families
right.
were leaving. Like, so she, like, there's a photo actually showing her kindergarten class, which was this very racially integrated, you know, all different colors of skin
yeah.
versus her like fifth grade class, which was all mostly all children of color.
Mm-hmm.
And just, and not only, you know, did the population change during her time, that time, you know, in her elementary school years, but the conditions of her school changed and she benefited because her mom was not willing to put up with, you know,
yeah.
A second class education for her. So her parents went to bat for her and got her, you know, in some accelerated programs and things like that. But she was lucky to have had advocates who spoke up for her, you know. So
her parents sounded amazing.
Her parents sounded rad.
She talked about them a lot last night.
Yeah. But I just really love the thrust of it all. Just like, you know, we all have the potential to do great things. Obviously, we're not all going to be First Lady of the United States, but you know, like we all have the potential.
Well, there's that dream shattered for me.
We all have the potential to do really great world-changing things.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not.
Yeah. She wasn't born into this.
No. Which is, it's a powerful thought, I think. She was great. Did you enjoy it?
Oh my gosh, I did. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. And to be totally fair, like I wouldn't have gotten these tickets on my own.
It was me.
Yeah,
I know.
It was you leading this thing. And it's not because I don't think she's wonderful. I do. I'm just not that much of a go see someone talk at the Tacoma Dome person.
To
you know
me,
what I mean?
To me, just the opportunity to be in the same room as just such a history maker. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like she's literally the first descendant of slaves to live in the White House as First Lady. Or as you know, even her husband, Barack Obama,
yeah.
Is not a descendant of slaves.
Nope.
His father is from Kenya.
Yeah, his path was different.
And his mom was a white woman from Kansas.
Yeah.
You know, and he grew up in Hawaii. So, like, it's pretty remarkable. Like, it's really, really remarkable. And I just the opportunity to be in the room with her was so cool. I sat at the edge of my seat the whole time, leaning forward. Like I
it's
get just
funny,
like a
like,
few inches closer.
I was tempted to sit at the edge of my seat and lean forward, but we were sitting at the very edge of like a cement balcony, over the very short edge of which was like a 30-foot drop to concrete.
Yeah.
And I, when I'm sitting at the edge of things like that, am always a little bit preoccupied with the idea of like, what if I just went over the edge?
Yeah, oh gosh, yeah.
Like, and I'm not sure in my mind whether that's like, what if something happened and I fell over the edge, or what if I were just to get up and jump?
Oh no.
I've just had this weird thing ever since I was a little person.
Oh,
when
no.
I get the edge of really tall things, like, what if I were to jump? Yeah. And I'm not going to do it. I haven't done it. I'm 46. I'm not going to do it. But like, it's always there. It was there with me the entire show last night.
Weird.
No kidding. Like, oh, it's always a little thing at the back of my mind. Like, Michelle Obama, cool, talking. What if I jumped?
Oh, gosh.
Not going to jump.
Goodness. I'm glad you didn't jump. That's good.
I know. Like, if I had sat one seat further back, I probably would have focused more.
Oh, how funny.
That's fine.
So
it's fine. Yeah.
So that was a rad experience. It was really just, I was grateful to get to be there.
Yeah, I was too. And you know, it was cooler and it was more than I thought it would be.
Cool.
They really took an effort to make like a show out of it, to the point where like before she started talking, it was almost a little bit ridiculous. There was like 35 minutes of like backstory video.
It was wonderful.
Like, you could have walked into that room not even having ever heard her name before, and before she went on stage to talk, you'd have been like, yeah, I know who she is.
Yeah. It was great.
It was really cool. And the sound was shockingly good for a venue that's famous for bad sound. Much credit to the person at the front of house doing the mixing. Like, the EQ on the vocals was good, and everything translated really well. And even sitting in the back where all the bad frequencies build up in a room, it was still totally easy to hear, very clear. As an engineer, I was sort of impressed. I was like, that's good. Good job.
I'm there soaking up like the meaningful stories and like the inspirational talk, and you're like, I'm thinking about potentially jumping from this balcony, and also the sound is good.
Yeah. The good sound is the only reason I'm not jumping from the balcony.
Terrible.
Well, it's funny because when I walk into a room like that, to me, it just feels like work, because I used to work in rooms like that all the time.
Right.
So I walk in there, and for me, it would be kind of almost more fun to be like, hey, let's do the sound or something, you know? And like, to have to like endure somebody else doing it is often very hard for me, because like, man, you could be doing this better and I could tell you how.
Yeah.
But this was not the case. Yeah. So I was happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so another cool thing that we did this last week, which kind of ties in a little bit of a link in our minds, and we're going to sort of explicate that, was we got to have coffee with our very dear friend Sharon, who is, we met her because she was our realtor.
Yeah.
And then she just became like our very dear friend.
Yeah.
It was so sweet, actually. So we had, every time we have coffee, it lasts for like 2.5 hours, you yeah. know, and ends up with her being half an hour late for whatever the next commitment she had.
Yes.
And she said to us this time, which I thought was just so incredibly moving and touching, you know, as we're leaving, she's like, you know, I've decided I'm your West Coast mom.
Even though my mom lives on the West Coast. I think she maybe thinks that I'm also from the East Coast.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, in the Northwest, it's just different. You know, it's more West Coast.
Sure. Yeah.
Your mom's inland. You know, we're on water. Which was so sweet, because like, we had already decided that like a year ago.
I know. I'm like, you're just finding this out, Sharon? That's good.
Oh, but it was so sweet. Like, we really do feel like, this sort of family kind of connection to her. Her relationship to us does feel maternal in a lot of ways.
Well, when we were going through the process of buying this house, like, we didn't know what the heck we were doing. And she really was so helpful in like guiding us through all of that. You know, like, I felt like she took care of us in a maternal sort of way through that process.
Yeah.
And that's really where it started. But we have a deeper connection besides just that too.
Oh, it's wonderful. And so she's got kind of an amazing backstory. Like, specifically, like, she's so inspiring to us because like, she was part of like so much of the stuff that inspires us now mm-hmm. in our lives today.
Like, we should say she's like 74 years old or
yeah,
something.
She's parent age for us, exactly.
Yeah.
She's within 6 months of being as old as my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Just right there.
Right.
And so she marched with MLK. Like, she did a lot of like feet on the ground work in the civil rights movement, in the women's movement, in the feminist movement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of these things like that started in the late 60s in the form that we know them now.
The stuff that we've read about in history books, she was there.
Yeah.
She was making that history.
Yeah.
She was part of it.
Before she was a realtor, she was a social worker, right? And
she did work in mental health.
Yeah. And so she comes from like a background of advocacy and a deep love of politics and social justice. And, you know, she transitioned in her work life. Like, she's been doing realty in Tacoma for like 41 years, which is insane. Oh my gosh. Like, she knows every single thing about this town, and it's just like remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
But like, even after she transitioned to doing that for her work, I mean, she also is almost a second, like, sort of passionate, full-time second job, was doing political stuff in parallel with it.
Raising money for candidates and doing activism.
And get out the vote stuff and working with the local, like, committees at the city level, at the county level, at the state level in some
mm-hmm,
cases.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's been really, really super involved.
Yeah.
Which is kind of amazing, because, like, she doesn't, like, always, like, really lead with that. But then, like, she'll just kind of like start talking about stuff. And it's like, you know everything.
I know. It's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And just listening to her stories from, you know, from that time, like earlier on in her life when she was involved, you know, in marching like with MLK and, you know, the feminist movement and all that kind of stuff. It's remarkable to like to sit across the table from somebody who was there at those moments and who has remained active. And I think there was one thing that you wanted to, one moment in our conversation you wanted to highlight, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And so she just said something in passing that really like, that really stuck with me. And so like, first of all, cards on the table, and I'm not saying anything she wouldn't say about herself loudly and immediately. she was a huge, huge Hillary supporter and was ever since Hillary kind of came on the national political scene, you know, and really felt, and she still feels personally wronged by what happened to Hillary in 2016, you know?
Right.
And like there are many of us who feel in varying degrees that that didn't go down the way that it should have. Mm-hmm. But she feels it personally.
And her comment that you wanted to highlight really illustrates that. I want you to
Yes, absolutely.
It.
And so what she shared about that was she's like those of us who started these movements aren't going to see the fruits of our labor.
Right.
That was really intense, right?
I sensed in her like a bit of sorrow.
Regretfulness almost or something.
That, like,
like a nuanced, sorrowful emotion.
Yeah. She was talking about Hillary in particular, and she's like, she's my generation. Yeah. She was part of us doing all that marching and the starting of these big social movements. Mm-hmm. And she's like, and we're not gonna get to have somebody in the White House that represents us. And look at all this work we've been doing for all these decades.
Yeah.
You know, she's not saying it. I wouldn't say she's not saying it in a bitter way.
I agree.
It's just maybe just sorrowful somewhat, you know, that
just the sense of like the opportunity isn't wasted, right? Like, but she won't necessarily just get to have that sense of completion.
Right.
For the 50 years of work that she's been putting in, 54, 55, I mean.
Right. And I think that she also, to be fair, like really loves the energy of younger people coming up and taking the mantle. That's, it's not like she's, you know, hell-bent on there being somebody of her generation that, you know. But I think that she's come to the realization that maybe the time is passing for someone like her to occupy the highest office in our land.
To get their day in the sun.
Yeah.
To get the recognition, to have whomever it is be an avatar of recognition for all the people of that generation who put in that effort and that work.
Right.
And that was just, it really stuck with me. I mean, I would just, it was, you know how sometimes someone says something and you kind of note it in the moment, but then you find yourself just thinking about it without meaning to, like hours later.
Yeah.
You know, and I brought it up with you in that moment. You know, like many hours after mm-hmm. dinner when we were doing the dishes, I was like, that thing that Sharon said,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it just brought up a lot of emotions in me. Just like the idea, it's really weird, right? Because like we are all so primed to think about our lives as kind of being the snapshot of human history, right?
Right.
Like human history started when I was born and will end when I die. And that's that. And like my experience, like this is the time horizon. This is the slice of time that matters the most because it's the one I'm here for,
right?
You know? But like, I mean, first of all, it's just an ahistorical perspective. We know that things have happened that were important in the past, and we know that important things will happen in the future. Right? You know, the sun does not like rise and set based on me or on you.
Right.
But like this idea that we may never, any of us, see the true ramifications of the energy that we put into the world, you know?
Yeah.
Which is just such a wild thought. I mean, it's both kind of like sad in a way, but also like really inspiring.
Right. So, I mean, we experienced the sadness that Sharon expressed, but I think you're right. It's also potentially a very inspiring thing to think about. And as you were talking about like the idea that we sort of see our lifetimes as the snapshot of human history, right? That's a pretty like individualistic point of view, right? Like there's, and I think that it is a particularly American thing.
I was just going to say the same thing.
To be focused on the individual, right? And it is, you know, your individualness that is, you know.
You're part of making America great. That's what makes America great is the individualism.
Oh, please don't ever say that.
No, it's okay. Like, as long as you don't put again at the end of it, it's still an okay sentiment,
that's
right?
That's true. All right. It just has bad taste in my mouth. But anyway, like, the focus on the individual is a very American concept. And if that's, it's also tied up, not to get like too much in the weeds here, but it's also, like capitalistic in nature, mm-hmm. you know, like if we are meant to compete with one another mm-hmm. to, you know, produce new ideas and inventions and work and, you know, like this, it's like every man for himself kind of like, you know, mm-hmm. Scenario in capitalistic, untethered capitalistic America.
Yeah, sure. And you also know, this idea that there should be a closed loop of sowing and reaping.
Right, 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 right. Like it's just, it really puts a lot of focus on the individual. However, if we get outside that individualistic point of view and we look at ourselves as part of a larger whole, not just the larger whole that currently is alive and exists in our world, but also as a continuum in history.
Yeah.
Right? Then your perspective can really shift in some pretty powerful ways. And I think that also in ways that give us reason to be a lot more optimistic.
Yeah.
About the work that we're investing ourselves in now and what its fruits might be sometime in the future, you know? Like, I think about this in terms of, like, going back to Sharon, her husband, Rogers.
Yeah.
Is roughly her same age, I think.
Yep.
We had them over for dinner last spring after we got the house all remodeled and everything. We brought them in for dinner, and what a wonderful evening it was. And Rogers shared with us a lot about his personal history that night.
Yeah.
Rogers is a black man. He was born, his grandparents, so not his great-grandparents, his grandparents
yeah.
were born into slavery
yeah.
in America.
Like their parents were slaves.
Their parents, so they didn't grow up, they weren't slaves as adults. I think slavery yeah. technically ended
yeah.
when they were children, I believe.
Yeah, so they became sharecroppers, I think, right?
Right. Yeah. But, you know, it blew me away to think that there was this man sitting on my couch here yeah. It was the year 2018 at the time.
Yeah.
There's a man sitting on my couch in the year 2018 who could reach back only two generations behind him, not his parents, but just back to his grandparents and touch slavery in the yeah. United States.
People whose laps he sat on.
Right. Right. You know, that this was, it's not that part of our history is not that far behind us. But when
no,
you think about it,
there are still living connections to it.
Yeah. When you think about the continuum of human history and human experience and, you know, our country even, like the work that folks were doing when his grandparents were born, mm-hmm. they didn't get to see, that generation didn't get to see the fruits, the full fruits. And in fact, we're still working
yeah.
to undo the legacy of slavery in our country. I mean, yep. there are arguments to be made that the current
the prison system.
Prison system is an extension
sure.
of slavery by a different name.
Sure.
You know, and where black Americans, Americans of color are incarcerated at much higher rates than we've talked about this before yeah. on this podcast, but people of color are incarcerated at much higher rates than white people in this country, even though the actual level of criminal activity yeah. is not any different.
And involuntary servitude is illegal in this country unless you are imprisoned.
Right.
That's how they wrote that amendment. And then they just started throwing all the black people in jail.
And then you can be in prison. And you know, this is a legacy that has continued unstopped since the end of slavery.
Yeah.
You know, so we're still doing that work, but again, the work that we're doing to try to undo more of that, we might not in our generation see the full fruits of that work, but it's a continuum, but it's yeah. not just about us, yeah. right? Like
it's about us. It's like we're all on a big freaking boat and like the rowing has to get done. And like when it's your time, you step up to the oar and you pull for the amount of time that you can pull.
Right.
And then like someone else takes your oar and it goes on for infinity.
Right.
And we are like, that ship has been rowed like for millennia.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I read this article last week. So I was doing some research for some of the topics that I'm writing about for this new record. And I stumbled on this article about optimism.
Yeah.
And the person writing was talking about how, you know, we can put our full wholehearted faith into these big ideas that we have about how we can make the world better. Mm-hmm. because we know that the work will continue once we're no longer around to experience it, right? That's a reason to be hopeful. You know, certainly there's room for someone like our friend Sharon to grieve the notion that someone of her generation is not going to get to fulfill all their hopes and dreams.
Yeah.
Like, I get that.
And that's valid.
And that's valid. But the flip side of that is that the work, that all that work mattered because it passed the baton to the next generation who's going to continue it and build upon it to make...
And their kids and their kids and their kids.
Yes.
And maybe in the year 2280, you know, if this planet is still around in a form that we would recognize, there will be like racial parity and there will be gender parity. Maybe, you know what I mean? But like, I think that we all just feel because we feel, I know that like when I was in college, like I learned about all these ideas and it was like, what? Well, this stuff all needs to get fixed and we're the people to do it.
Right now.
Right.
Yeah.
And
I think
that like when I was like 19 years old, I kind of thought that, well, thank God we're on the case. My generation's going to be the ones. No one else is aware of this stuff, but we have been made aware. And now that we know, like I kind of thought that maybe by the time we were 35, we would get the job done, you know, because we were passionate and there were a lot of us and we were the new generation. And
you're brought up in a culture that says that celebrates the individual, and right, and so you were told that you can make this happen.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right. You're an American. You can do anything.
Right.
You could be the one. You could be the one to end gender and racial disparities.
Right, right.
Turns out
you're doing the work and you're continuing work that people have done for a long time before you.
It's just the time horizon is just radically longer than I think we get imbued with the idea of.
Right. And here's the thing that,
that
like 15 really...
15-year time horizon I thought in college, I was off by a factor of probably 100.
Yeah, probably so. But here's the thing that really like is a nugget of meaning for me in all of this. Like, okay, so sure, yeah, we can be optimistic because the work is going to continue after we're dead, blah, 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 whatever. Like, yes, that's a thing. And so like, but here's the thing, like the choice in this moment is to either embrace that kind of optimism or to be cynical.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and honestly, what I'm coming to a greater understanding of recently is that my cynicism is required. Our cynicism is required for the status quo to remain the status quo.
As soon as you think it can't be changed, then you're not going to try to change it.
Right.
And therefore it will not be changed.
Exactly. And so this is what's meaningful about this to me is that like, yeah, I could sit back and be like, man, nothing's ever changing. It's taking too long. You know, or
everything sucks. It's never going to change.
Yeah. Everything sucks. Or, you know, I turn on the news and it's just all bad all the time. I can't deal with it anymore. Here's the thing. Like optimism is not naive. So like I guess it can be, but it doesn't have to be, right? Like we can take in all the things that feel bad and feel slow and feel, you know, heavy, and still with that knowledge, wide open knowledge of how steep these challenges are that we have, to choose instead of a cynical attitude of like, ugh, just can't deal with that, you know, to instead choose an attitude of, okay, this is a really steep challenge. And so what are the big ideas to get us beyond these challenges?
Yeah.
And to start down that path with an eye toward it is possible.
Yeah.
And I can remain optimistic even as I get older and older and become an old woman and I'm Norma and Neil's age, you know, and I can still remain optimistic knowing that whatever work that I have done in my lifetime to push that ball forward will continue. And that can give me reason to continue optimism instead of sinking into cynicism, which is not helpful for the cause at all.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right.
Nor is it helpful for me as a person, right?
Well, if your outlook informs the energy that you bring to stuff, right? So if you start with a bad attitude, like, well, that's the energy you're going to bring into stuff. If you start with an idea of probably not very much is possible, if anything at all, well, then that's the limit you've set.
Right.
It's exactly the same mentality that informs how we do our house concerts on an open donation basis, right?
Right.
Like if we were to tell people, that's why we tell all of our hosts, like, do not say what a suggested donation is. Because as soon as you suggest a donation for a thing, for one of our house concerts, you have set effectively a ceiling.
Right.
You've
told
people this will be a $20 thing. It will, and what you're saying to them implicitly is it for sure won't be a $50 or $100 thing, right? And what we have found by like just leaving it open and setting like an infinite, unbounded ceiling on the possibility of what this evening could be with these people, if we can make it magical enough, There's no upward limit to how people right. will value that and the it's sense true. Of possibility that they will see for that in their lives.
Right, right. And of course, another important part of that is that folks have varying means.
Yeah.
You know, we come across all different. And so it's open for people to express however right. they can and want to.
And we all have individual like abilities in Ray, like working for social justice stuff too. Like you and I have pretty unbounded capacity for that. But like there are people who have five times as much as us. Like they were born for it and they can just yeah. be super effective. And there are also a lot of people who just sort of max out at like a very less amount of effort. Like they mm-hmm. just don't have a lot of passion for it or mm-hmm. a lot of ability, or they get frustrated easily mm-hmm. with it or whatever, or it's just not their thing.
Right.
So I mean, from each according to their ability to each according to their need kind of.
Right. Know? Totally. And I think this ties in with what we were talking about earlier with Michelle Obama's message too. And this idea that we each have a story and yeah. like we each have possibility that can be interpreted as a very like individualistic sort of attitude toward mm-hmm. life. Like it's your story, you own it. And yes, it's true. And you can, you know, you have all this potential and possibility within you. But I think that the real power in that idea comes when we contextualize it as your story is one of many.
Yeah.
And that it is the whole working together.
You're part of a whole.
Yeah. And that your part really matters.
Yeah.
But the power in it comes when you engage your story as part of the whole.
Yeah.
Working toward better things as a society, as a community, as
yeah.
the neighborhood that we're in right now, right? Like
sure.
each person who was out picketing on Sunday, you know, comes from a different background, has a different set of skills, different sets of, you know, experiences.
Backgrounds, abilities.
Things to
yeah.
offer.
Expertise.
To, yeah.
yeah.
And we see that sort of playing out with different people taking different roles in, you know, in showing up for this effort.
Yeah.
But the effort, the collective effort is what matters. If there was one person out there with a picket sign on Sunday, it wouldn't matter as much,
yeah.
right? But because we're there together, each bringing what we have to bring to the collective, that's what makes it meaningful.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Yeah. It's one of those situations, as I'm getting older, I realize like so many situations are in life where the whole is just so much more than the sum of the parts.
Absolutely.
You know, and you don't have to try to do everything yourself.
No.
Like it's okay. I mean, it's wonderful to be an American individual and to try to be the sum total of everything for yourself,
right.
you know, and that's certainly one paradigm. And it's good in as much as that sort of worldview makes one perhaps more prone to develop a broad set of skills and to be, you know, a generalist in some ways. And I
sure.
think that can be really, really good, you know, like not unlike our DIY music careers. Like we've had to figure out how to do a whole bunch of different things, and that's wonderful and it's enriching mm-hmm. and I feel the better for it as a person.
But we wouldn't be able to do what we do at all without the community of people around
no,
us.
No, that's like, exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just doing our bit.
We're doing our bit in this part of in this corner of the world. Yeah. I think one of my favorite things that Michelle said last night,
yeah.
Which sort of like ties this all, I think, together. She ended with sort of a pretty passionate statement about this notion that, you know, faced with the very great challenges that we have in our country, you
yeah.
know, and in our world. And often being confronted on a daily basis with leaders who lead is a hard word, is maybe the wrong word. Leaders who lead with fear.
Sure.
And leaders who lead with trying to stoke fear of people who are other
yeah.
than we are.
It's not leading so much as demagoguing,
yeah.
really.
Yeah. yeah. But in the face of all of that, one of the things that she had to say at the end was that, you know what, there's not going to be any one person who is going to save us
yeah.
from that. There's not going to be any one person who's going to have the answer.
Yeah.
She's like, actually, we are all of us the answer.
Yeah.
And we are the ones who are going to save us.
And all we have is us.
Yeah. And so the idea of bringing your individual self and engaging in this collective whole for the good of everyone, like that, to me, that I find hope there.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially like in light of, say, the news of this past weekend, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I think there are a whole bunch of really let down people in the world right now who really kind of felt like they were going to have a savior swooping in on a white horse this weekend
right.
to save us from where we're at. And you know what? That was never going to happen. that was never going to be the way it is. Like, if anything is going to change in this country, if the conditions of how we're all living together and the work that we're doing together are going to change for the better and in a way where we feel like we're more unified and like we're all in a happier place, it's just going to be because we all put our energy toward that and we all make it happen.
Yep.
It's not going to be it's not going to be a sole prosecutor riding in on a white horse to save us all from ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's not going to go down like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting as you describe that. Like, I'm thinking about the parallel of like the microcosm of our little neighborhood struggle that we're in right now, right? Like, our neighborhood is kind of up against people with like lots of resources and powerful attorneys. And it seems like a bit of a David and Goliath fight, right? And it feels like the struggle, is bigger than, the struggle is definitely bigger than any individual one of us, right? We have to come together in order to fight this thing. And chances are decent that we could actually win, right? Yeah. And that's great in and of itself, but the stuff that's happening under the surface because of having to come together and work on this struggle together is what I think the real meat of this experience has been and will continue to be. Like, we're establishing connections with our neighbors in a way that we would never have before. And I think if we take that example sort of writ large, right?
Yeah.
Like, the meat of what we get to experience is not necessarily, like, as a whole culture. I hope one day we totally defeat, and I have hope that we will totally defeat racism, sexism, institutionalized versions of those things in our society. I hope that they are gone to the history bin. I believe that they will be. But the meat of what we experience in the meantime before that actually comes to fruition is getting to do the work in connection with people and experiencing the richness of that communal effort.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I feel hopeful.
Yeah, right on. I feel hopeful. The Shannon Curtis story. Yeah, but you know what? I do too. And like you were touching upon, like, it doesn't feel naive to me. It feels like an eyes wide open form of optimism.
Yes.
You know? And I find that enormously encouraging in my personal life, you know? The idea that there's stuff that we can fight for and that the fight isn't useless.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think? Is this a good place to wrap this segment?
Sounds good to me.
Love it. So, hey, we're at like 50 minutes. Should this be the whole episode or should we get back into a listener topic after a break?
I think it's a pretty short listener topic. So
I think we could do it efficiently.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will do a listener topic from Kitty S on our relationships with our fathers.
See you soon.
That was very good, and we're back. I thought it was very concise, punchy.
Good job.
Thank you.
A plus.
Yep. Getting pretty good at the Amber Becks. So, hey, it's listener topic time.
Woohoo!
Yeah, we have a listener topic from one of our just absolute favorite humans, Kitty.
We take all of our listener topics, by the way, from our Misfit Stars group.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things you get to do when
that's
you
what
become
they're called
a member.
Listener topics. Well, I guess anyone could listen.
Right.
Yeah.
They're like member topics,
member
really.
Member topics, really. Mm. But that's not as catchy a name, really.
No, it's not.
I don't know.
So, Kitty, what's her question?
Kitty's question is, it's more of a statement, but then there are questions. It's in some parts. So here is the entirety of it. She says, I'd love at some point to hear you both talk about your relationships with your fathers. Did they support you or did you have to fight them? Were you interested in the same things? Did you do things together, just the two of you?
It's so interesting. I wonder, and maybe Kitty can talk about this in our group, where this where this idea came from.
Because clearly it's not out of the clear blue sky like it seems to us.
She's got some reason she's asking this question.
Yeah.
So I would love to know that, Kitty, but we thought this would be an interesting little topic to tackle.
Yeah, so let's just, should we talk first in a general way about our relationships or should we just do it
let's
the questions?
The questions are great. Guiding, because I mean, honestly, with any like familial relationship, do you have 5 hours? I could talk about it for a long time.
Sure.
So it's nice to have these questions actually to focus the
structure.
Conversation. Yes.
Structure, we appreciate the structure.
Yeah.
So did they support you? First question, Shannon, did your dad support you or did you have to fight him?
No, I didn't have to fight him. I should give a little bit of context, I guess.
Yeah,
and
that's a good
I'm
idea.
I'm thinking that maybe she means here, did he, our dads support us like in our careers. I'm thinking that's...
Oh, that's not the sense I got at
no,
all.
No, is that not what you got? How do you take it?
Well, I just took it as, did they just support you as you were individuating as a human?
Oh.
You know? What were we hearing recently where someone, it was Michelle Obama talking about how like my dad loved me very much. And by love, I don't mean in a paternalistic, pandering, condescending way,
right?
But rather in, supporting me as I was becoming the person that I became, right?
Respecting her.
Yeah.
As she grew and yeah. found her own voice and legs and
another little link back yeah. to the Michelle Obama thing.
I love it.
Yeah. So that's the sense I took it in.
Interesting. Okay. Well, the context, I guess, for me is that and full disclosure here, my dad listens to our podcast. So
what's up, Dad?
Hi, Dad. He and his wife are members. So they're some of our Misfit stars, yeah. which is wonderful.
Yeah.
So you know, and this is I'm gonna share stuff that I know that my it's not private information. This is stuff that my dad and I have talked about openly and I think is perfectly fine to share.
Yeah.
But as a kid, there were actually two different phases of my relationship with my dad as a kid. I remember, and I'll share some of this because they're related to some of the following questions yeah. that Kitty had. My early childhood, some memories with him that are very strong memories and stuck with me and made an impression.
Yeah.
And then moving into sort of my like later childhood, I didn't have a close relationship with my dad, mm-hmm. During those years. We lived in the same house, but, there was just a lot of emotional distance.
Yeah.
And so as I was developing, like as a teenager, like a, you know, middle schooler, a teenager, I don't recall when I think back on that time of my life, I don't really in the picture of my memory, my dad's not really part of
yeah.
that the picture.
It was kind of like you and your mom and your sister more.
Yeah. yeah. And so, so there wasn't, you know, I didn't have, as I was really, you know, experiencing that sort of individuating, you know, starting that part period of my life, there just wasn't much of a connection there. Moving into my 20s, there was actually a period of time in which I didn't talk with my dad for a few years.
Yeah.
I was dealing with a lot of anger after my parents' divorce. And even though I was in my 20s, I wasn't even a kid yeah. anymore when that happened. That was a time where I was just really... I was just mad.
Yeah.
And it felt really important to me to just construct this wall between me and him. And I just, you know...
Yeah.
Until I came to the point where I realized that maintaining that wall was requiring more energy of me
yeah.
that I didn't have to give. And
funny how that works, huh?
Yeah. And so I punched a big hole in the wall and, you know, ended up reaching out to him and starting a relationship with him again, which yeah. was really an interesting time. So he and I really sort of, I think the relationship we have now, mm-hmm. which I think is good. And I enjoy, like really didn't start until like, that relationship was born sometime in my like mid to late 20s.
Yeah, right.
And it's been lovely to see how that has grown over those years since. So during that time though, when we were rebuilding mm-hmm. that relationship was really when I was starting to kind of figure out what I was doing with my life, like in my career and as a person.
And who you were.
And who I was. And I think that, honestly, I felt a lot of support from my dad at that time in those efforts because, you know, because really probably for the first time he was engaging with me emotionally in a way that he maybe hadn't before. And so I felt like he was really kind of all in. Like here's a fun example of that. Before I started doing my solo stuff, I was in a band, right? I was in a rock band.
A very good rock band.
Thank you. And I remember one Christmas, my dad gave me a Christmas gift. And it was this whole outfit meant to be like for the stage, for me to wear on stage, like the rock star outfit.
What age were you, would you say?
This was like my late 20s, yeah. you know.
What was the outfit? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. It was like these amazing black leather pants.
No kidding.
And like this sparkly shirt. And like, it's not something that you would wear just, you know, out. Like
it was stage clothes.
It was stage clothes, but it was really well, you know.
Did you wear them?
Yeah, absolutely. And
do you have any photos?
I don't think I do. I mean, we didn't have like phones in our pockets like we do nowadays, right? But like I think he was really invested in encouraging me to like pursue these things I was passionate about, even in maybe even a more pronounced way than he might have been had we had a continual relationship throughout my entire
childhood. Making up for a bit of lost time there.
Yeah, yeah. So I felt
that's
a
valid,
lot of...
That's good.
Oh, absolutely. I felt a lot of support from him in that regard.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the stage clothes. That's rad. Yeah. Well, I mean, especially for him to have gotten you stage clothes that you thought were rad, too. Like... That's a hard thing. That's cool.
Yeah.
I love it. Awesome. So,
well, how about you?
So how about me? Yeah. So yeah, I have always felt supported by my dad. And it's really interesting. So like when I think about like, there's a couple layers of it, right? So like I've just always felt close to my dad. We're pretty similar people. He's got a big personality and he pipelined that into me as a little person, you know? I have grown up with his sense of humor and his outward, like, engaging with other people thing that he has.
I roll my eyes at both of you when you find things like Monty Python type humor funny. I'm like, oh, God.
My dad...
Steve Martin stuff. I'm like, oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah.
You got that straight from your dad.
Oh, for sure. No, my dad imbued in me a very healthy sense of the absurd.
Yes.
Which I appreciate because sometimes it's just really helpful to look at the absurd in life because otherwise, like, it can get real serious.
Totally.
You know?
And you can make your wife's eyes roll.
Oh, all of the time. All of the time, which is wonderful. And like my dad is highly intellectual, you know, very smart guy, just like a lot of computing power up there. And so is my mom. And so like, you know, they very much supported me in academic endeavors and encouraged me in that way when I was a kid, got me to piano lessons. And you know, it was all wonderful and I felt super supported. And my dad's big into sports. He got me in a little league, which was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I have so many fond memories of him encouraging me in those things, but never being pushy about it.
Uh-huh.
You know, it wasn't like he was living out frustrated ambitions. It wasn't like he thought that I was going to be a major leaguer. It's just that he loved it and wanted to pass on that love of it to me and did.
That's,
you know,
cool.
And I was good to a point and then I wasn't. And that was also fine. There was never any disappointment there, which I felt was really cool.
That's
like
cool.
In retrospect, you know, it wasn't like when I stopped doing baseball after Little League, he was bummed.
Right.
He got it, you know?
Yeah. How about moving into adult years? Like,
well, you know, it's interesting because like my moving into adult years, I mean, as with everyone, it was characterized by my figuring out who I am and what I want to like maybe do with my life, you
mm-hmm.
know? And it's funny because like what I always thought I wanted to do when I was a kid was to do music.
Right.
You know, and like do rock music somehow, you know,
right.
Like from when I was like, you know, when I was like a kid, when I was like 12, he bought me my first synthesizer when I was 12 years old. He bought me a keyboard and a keyboard stand and a little PV guitar amplifier to put it through.
Supportive.
Oh my gosh. So much so, you know,
yeah.
He helped me be in my first band in that way,
that's
which was
cool.
A big deal, you know?
Yeah.
And my dad was a radio disc jockey. And so, you know, from the 60s onward. And so he had a huge record collection, was always playing records. And so I got my love of rock music and really the encouragement to start doing that for myself from him. But oddly, what I didn't get from him was like any encouragement to do it as a career. Like, I don't
right.
think he understood that like doing music in that way could
right.
be a career,
right.
which is really interesting. I had to figure that part out on my own.
But was he supportive of you in that?
Oh, so much. So much so.
Great.
So much so. But like, it's one thing he wasn't able to give me, which is very interesting, you
interesting.
Know? Especially because like, you'd think that he'd be the one, like Mr. Rock and Roll guy would be the one like, hey, what if you did this? But not at all. Like the encouragement I got on that side of things was go to a good college, like get a degree from a good college and get yourself a job that you'll be stable and comfortable.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Which, you know, it's funny. That didn't work out for me well at all.
The stable, comfortable job.
No, it's funny because like my dad has a hugely entrepreneurial nature. You know, he started
yeah.
a couple of different companies when I was a kid and they both were really successful. And like, I think that the reason that he has been drawn in those ways in his life is because, and he works from home now and barely goes into the office of the radio station he works at. And I think that like, it's because he, like me, has like a healthy skepticism in regards to authority.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doesn't like being told what to do a lot all the time, you know, more likes to tell as opposed to be told.
Yeah.
And I for sure inherited that, you know? And so like the traditional job thing in my 20s worked out really badly for me.
Yeah.
Like as long as I was left alone to do whatever the hell I wanted, it worked out great. But as soon as someone was like trying to hold me accountable for stuff, I was like, no, you know what? Screw you.
Oh my gosh.
It doesn't work well with how I'm built.
The trouble employee.
Yeah, you know, I'm not the best employee.
Not suited for quote unquote structure.
Yeah. I had a therapist before I got sober who said something that has stuck with me for so long. It's funny, I went to therapy because I thought I needed therapy. Turns out I just needed to get sober. But he said to me, he's like, you strike me as the kind of person who needs a lot of unstructured time.
Uh-huh.
Which, like, that is like my mantra for adulthood.
Welcome to self-employment. You're working all the time now.
Yeah. But hey, it beats working for someone else.
I totally get it. Yeah. Yes.
So, long story short, yeah. I've never felt like I had to fight my dad. I mean, the whole question of, like, did you have to fight them, I think really comes from this place in the questioning of, like, were they trying to live out their ambitions through you? Did they have an agenda for you?
Right.
And I don't feel like I had that at all.
That's great.
I felt like I had a really positive situation there.
That's cool. So Kitty's next question is, her next question is, mm-hmm. were you interested in the same things? I think you've kind of answered some of that already.
Yeah, for sure. I just looked up to my dad so much and I just wanted to be like him, you know? Yeah. So the stuff he was into, I tried to be into.
Yeah. And then the last question she has, did you do things together, just the two of you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah. And a lot of it was just like, you know, dad-son stuff, which was wonderful. You know, lots of catch, lots of shooting hoops, lots mm-hmm. of, just lots of, like, we would always go out together on, like, little missions, you know?
Cool.
Like, to the hardware store to get some lumber, or to, like, we lived in Vermont and we had 100 acres, which sounds like a lot, but it was nothing. It was Vermont in the 70s. Like, our neighbors had 1,000, you know what I mean? It was just, like, land for everyone. There's no humans here. And we had to post, because there's hunting. There's a hunting season in November.
Right.
And if you don't want people to come, like, fire bullets on your property, like, the default position is that people can fire bullets on your property.
Oh.
And if you don't want them to,
right.
you have to go post signs all around the perimeter, like every 200 feet or whatever.
Right.
And so we go out with a huge stack of signs and nails and a hammer and, like, post all the way around the perimeter of, like, a 100 acre property, which, I mean, took like 8 hours, you
sure.
know what I mean? But it was like something I remember so fondly, walking
Aww.
Through the woods with my dad on a mission.
That's
doing
cool.
stuff, you
That's
know?
That's really cool.
Yeah, and we would go to baseball games a whole lot. My mom wasn't into that at all and never went. And my sister came sometimes, but sometimes she would just like be off like having a mommy-daughter date with my mom when we were down in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the time it would just be me and my dad at baseball games,
mm-hmm.
and that's obviously a hugely fond memory.
Mm-hmm.
He always made time.
That's cool.
Yep. How about you?
Well, so the last two questions kind of seem to tie together for me. I don't know that. So as a kid, I talked about earlier how there was that like early childhood part where I have some memories, great memories of with my dad.
Yeah.
And that's really where these two answers come from for me. Were we interested in the same things? My dad is musical. He's the music guy in our family.
One of those really annoying guys who can just sit down and play anything.
Yeah.
A natural musician.
By ear. And so he as a kid took accordion lessons.
Sexy.
Because that is really sexy.
Hey man, it was like the 50s.
Totally. It was actually the 50s. Yeah. So, but he took accordion lessons and then later on taught himself piano and organ.
Yeah.
So my parents bought a baby grand piano sometime when I was really little. I don't actually remember ever not having it. So
yeah.
They must have gotten it when I was very young. My dad would just sit down at the piano and just play. He'd play, you know, occasionally he'd play like church songs, like
sure.
old, you know, hymn type things.
Yeah.
But he would also play just all sorts of like old standards from like the 20s and 30s and 40s, you know, like, and so some of my fondest.
And sing too, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. He has a great voice. Some of my favorite memories of when I was a little kid was when my dad would start playing the piano. Like I can remember going into our living room and twirling around dancing on our avocado green shag carpet while he played piano. Right. And then, you know, as I got older and like learned how to sing more, you know, like I would, you know, join him in singing with some of the songs he'd play. And like, so that was like an early part of my life where, you know, I was studying classical piano starting at age 4 and onward. And that was, you know, a part of my life, but the real enjoyment of like singing for fun and, you know, and that sort of thing, like that came from experiences with my dad early on. And, you know, I also remember, my dad's like a born entertainer, right? Like,
oh, it's so true.
He
just give him a room full of people. He's good.
Yeah.
My dad's like that too.
Yeah, it's true. Our dads are similar in that way. But like, I have this memory of my dad, when I was young, we would go away each year for like a long weekend family camp with our church,
yeah.
you know? And my dad was in charge of like the entertainment. He was one of the people in charge of the entertainment for the whole family gatherings. And so like we would get together each evening at this family camp, and he would have been in charge of preparing like skits and songs and stuff for the—
Talk about playing to his strengths.
Oh my gosh.
Just a one man entertainment committee.
He totally had it all. He had people in the palm of his hand, you know, making them laugh. Yeah. And so, you know, it's interesting that I became someone who, if, you know, does entertainment, you know, in a way for people, like yeah. performing in yep. front of people.
That it's art, people. It's art.
It's art. It's
but
not
the live thing, there is a part of it that's entertaining to people. Yeah. We accept that.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. But the idea of being in front of a group of people yeah. and like I see how that like is a thread back to
oh, for sure.
that.
Giving them something to like, they're quiet, they watch you, and they consume the thing you're doing.
But they, yeah, I see that performance thread.
100%. You know, oh, yeah. totally.
So, you know, so yeah, we, as an early on in my life, we did things together, you know, my sister would join in on the sing-alongs at home too.
Yeah.
At a certain point, I remember those stopping. And actually my sister and I continued that tradition together. Like as we got older, like mm-hmm. It transitioned into like when I was like more in middle school, high school, my sister and I would sit down at the piano together and yeah. do that.
One of the first songs you ever wrote was a co-write with your sister, right?
It was.
Yeah.
It was. So the first song I ever wrote was a co-write
so cool.
with my sister.
I love it.
So, yeah. So, yeah. I think that's about it. That's what I remember. Those are the things that like the Venn diagram of interests and...
Yeah, love it.
You know.
It's so interesting that we both ended up on these musical paths and like our dads were both huge influences in our lives in that way, but kind of circuitously and
yeah.
like, and with a, like, they gave us a bunch of tools, but like we ultimately had to figure out how to use them ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think, yeah, for sure. What I do with my life and my career right now is... Yeah, has been defined in iterative steps over the years as I figured out who I am and what I want to do in the world and what I want to be all about. But it definitely has ties back to my dad in my early life.
Well, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, dads.
Thanks, dads. Thanks for the question, Kitty. And I want to know where this question came from, Kitty.
Very, very interested to know about that.
Yeah.
Well, hey, thank you all so much for listening. This yes. has been a fun talk, Shannon.
It's
Thanks
been
for
good.
Having this nice talk with me.
It was a nice talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How cool. Love that we get to do this.
Yes.
I love that we are 19 episodes into this just new thing that we've started doing. We're just having a podcast now. We're just having conversations
That's
in a structured fashion.
That's what we do now.
And I like it. Like, I feel like we're getting better at it personally. Like, it just seems like... If I don't say so myself. I don't know. It's so funny. I think that like if you ask anyone who is like a new listener to the podcast, because we get those constantly and people will be like, yeah, I listened to the most recent one and then I went back and listened to the first one and it's like two different podcasts.
Right, right.
I really do think that like the rhythm of it, the pacing, we're maybe getting a little better.
Okay. I'm sure.
Do you think we're getting worse?
No, but like.
Well, what the heck?
But why? We don't need to pat ourselves on the back for it.
Well, there's no one else here, Shannon.
Good job, Jamie.
I'm just trying to celebrate okay. what I think of as an achievement that you and I have done that I am proud of.
Okay, I can accept that.
Okay,
high
good.
Five.
Hey,
give me a high five. Okay.
Right on. So, hey, this is a public episode of Misfit Stars, meaning that you're just sitting here listening to it all the way through. Like, you didn't have to go onto the special website for it. You didn't have to do the special app. You're just sitting here listening to it because...
You know why? You know why they can sit and listen to the whole thing?
Because they have been given that ability by the people who support this podcast.
That's right.
That's why. And so, what this means is, if you're listening to this podcast and you are not yet a supporting member, well, hey, what if you were? What if you supported it?
You could do that.
That would be cool.
Mm-hmm.
We need all the help we can get, people.
Yeah.
It's really true.
We would love that.
So you just go to misfitstars.com. You click on the second of the two big pink buttons, the one that says unlock all episodes. You go sign up. It's inexpensive. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
As fun as signing up on a website can be, really.
Yeah.
It's a good website sign-up experience, I think.
And thank you so, so much, those of you who are our supporting members.
Yeah.
It just means so much to us that we have your support in this effort, in this endeavor. And just... In general,
life,
it's something that lifts us all the time. Like we just seriously, like there are some days, you know how there are days when you wake up and you're like, can I do today?
That was yesterday for me. You remember? I started off yesterday like a 3-year-old, not fully in control of my emotions.
Yeah. But you know, honestly, knowing that there are folks that are behind us that have cast their lot in with us and said, yes, I support this. that is so incredibly helpful on the days that feel like we just can't do it.
That's
so
really true.
Thank you so much for those of you who are supporting members. We appreciate you immensely.
Yeah, so immensely. It's very, very cool. Thank you. What do you think? We good?
I'm good.
All right, great. Well, hey, thanks everyone for listening. We will be back next week. We might even be back sooner. Shannon has this scheme about a secret podcast episode.
Secret surprise that's no longer a surprise or a secret because I've announced it now.
If you want to be one of the first people to hear Shannon's new single from her new record, which we are so proud of and think is really, really, really cool and are so excited for you to hear, get yourself into this supporting member status.
MisfitStars.com.
Yeah, and get signed up and you will be one of the first batch of people to hear this new song, and I think that's pretty cool.
Cool. All right, you guys, you all.
Yep.
Take good care of yourselves.
Yeah, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.